live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Silver and Black Today, your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Gulbranson.
All right, it is Friday. Thank God for Friday, especially this week. It's been a long one for a lot of us. Welcome back to Silver and Black Today. As always, powered by our good friends, Sam and Ash, injury attorneys, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what is right. You can also be part of the show. Get on the phone. We will get you on the air, 702-365-9200 is the number. You could also text us, the Salmon Ash text line. Thanks for them for bringing that to us. 69187. Use the letters RNR, then put your question and your name, or your comment in your name, and we'll get to you. So thanks for being back with us here. Scott Gulbranson, joined by my partner, Q Myers. Q, you ready for this Friday, man? I know you started your new show down in Texas. It's been a bit of a crazy week for everybody, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. I'm definitely looking forward to, this day getting wrapped up and just getting into the weekend and decompressing a little bit and trying to regroup and get things going. You know, when you change schedules, you got to get a new routine. I'm a very routine type dude, and so I have it very set in my ways. And so it takes me a little while to get a new one and then get comfortable with it. So I'm still working out the kinks, but we're going to get there, man. We're going to be all right.
Absolutely. Well, you're a tough dude. You'll be fine. But, yeah, it when everything gets switched up, I mean – And look, this has been the last 10 months, right? We've all had to deal with changes in everything we've done. Then you add in the professional stuff on top of it. It becomes a little bit crazy. But at least we'll have some NFL football this weekend. We have the national championship game in college on Monday. It's going to be interesting. And it looks like even despite some of the issues with Ohio State, they're going to get that football game on Monday. They got to play that game on Monday. Is there any question that game will go off, Q?
No, I don't think so. There was earlier in the week, but it looks like everything is all good to go. I think it was just like a trainer on the offensive, on the Ohio State side of things that was going through some stuff. So, yeah, I think that the game happens on Monday, and I'm excited about it, man. It should be a fun one. Alabama and Ohio State, the way that Ohio State dismantled Clemson, man, you kind of start to get a little bit of doubt in your head. Like, is Alabama going to be able to get this game? And make no mistake about it, let's make no bones about it, I am Roll Tide all day. So let you know that there is no question. I'm not trying to be professional. I'm not trying to be down the middle. I'm trying to Roll Tide.
Yeah, and I think that, look, I was surprised by Ohio State. There's no question, and all that. But I think Alabama is just too good. But you never know. That's why they play the game. The question I have for you, though, is this. So all year long, we heard about the NFL. We heard about teams, especially those at the bottom rung who were not doing so well, that they were going to, just like last year, it was tank for Tua. This year it was tank for Trevor, right? And so now you look at the quarterback situation in the draft. If Justin Fields somehow went out and beat Alabama and had a really good game, could he leapfrog Trevor Lawrence and become the first pick?
No.
You don't think so?
No, I mean, just because I don't think so. I just think with all the hype that has been around Trevor Lawrence for so long, I don't think there's any mistake in that he's going to be in Jacksonville. The only way he won't be in Jacksonville is if some team goes ahead and gives a bounty to Jacksonville to come up off that number one spot. In my opinion, you know, I think everybody's been ready for Trevor Lawrence to go into the NFL since his freshman season. So I don't think that there's anything that's going to change the number one overall pick in this upcoming draft. Is Trevor Lawrence, and if not, I would be absolutely floored, and I don't think that's going to happen.
So would I. I've not been – look, Justin Fields is a good player, don't get me wrong, but I have not been that impressed, and I think he's much more – of a project at the pro level. I think, I'm not saying he can't make it, because I think he could. He's a very talented young man. I just don't, I've never been so enamored with his talent where I look at Trevor Lawrence. I said, yeah, he's going to, like all rookie quarterbacks have their issues, of course, in the NFL, especially a guy like that who's probably going to come in and start. It's going to take some time, but he is, to me, more pro ready than Fields, even though Fields is a very, very gifted athlete. So we'll have to see how that goes. But coming up on the show, actually, at 3 o'clock, we're going to be joined, as we are every Friday, by Jeff Parles from Book It HQ. He's going to give us some betting advice as well, and we're going to talk through some of the games this weekend. if you want some before that, you can check out Q's Locked On Bets podcast with Lee Sterling from Paramount Sports. And Q, I know Lee was on, he does some spots with JT. He was on this air yesterday with JT as well. It's a big weekend because you have wild card football and then the college game, and then you have NBA and college basketball all moving around. So there's a lot. If you do a little bit of sports wagering, there's a lot to do this weekend.
Yeah, there really, really is, man. And, you know, our show is usually about, you know, 13 to 15 minutes long. But with everything going on, like you just rolled out, it's been closer to 18, 20 minutes, you know, each and every day because there's just so much to get in. And usually we highlight like three games each and every day. But a couple times this week already, it's been like, man, just give me one more, Lee. I mean, this is good stuff. Give me one more. And, you know, we hit a little bit of a slow streak where we were losing. But now we got back on that horse. And even yesterday, man, won all three of the games. So, wow. Yeah, pretty excited about the direction that the show is going. And Lee's great, as you very well know. And he's been a longtime friend of JT. So I can imagine you'll hear him a lot on these airwaves as well.
Yeah, but make sure you go subscribe to that Locked On Bets podcast. It's awesome. And like you said, on most days, not a Friday before a massive weekend, but on most days, it's like 15 minutes. It's awesome. You can sit there, do your treadmill, do your jog, whatever you're doing, or on your commute, and you get everything you need in a very quick time. So Q and Lee get it done very quickly. It's very entertaining as well. Don't forget also to subscribe to Q's Locked On Raider podcast on that Locked On network. It's killer. Make sure you get that. You can listen to that in the morning and you can listen to us in the evening as well. Coming up at the bottom of this hour, we'll get to your call. So this first segment, we like to run through the day's news and kind of thoughts and stuff like that to set the table for the show. But after the first break, we will get to your call, 702-365-9200. And then we'll be joined by Noah Strang, who's a staff writer up at silverandblacktoday.com. He wrote a piece, cued blowing up the website, by the way. Just it blows my mind sometimes when we post stuff and the traffic that comes to certain stories. The kind of getting to know Gus Bradley piece that Noah did, because we continue to hear, I've not heard anything to the contrary, that Gus Bradley is the leading candidate for the defensive coordinator position. Some people are excited, some people are not. But that story and who he is and his background, because everybody knows he was with the Chargers the last several years, but they don't know the whole history before that. So getting all that, a lot of people yesterday, our discussion on the air about him being part of the Legion of Boom and being on Pete Carroll's staff, not a lot of people knew that. So I think, you know, if you're going to start to have an opinion on whether or not you like that guy, if he does get hired, it's good to know who he is, right?
Yeah, and the thing about it is his name just doesn't bounce off the page like, you know, Wade Phillips, which is everyone. I mean, Raider Nation is just locked in on Wade Phillips. And, you know, again, every day I just continue to say that that's not going to happen. You know, he's not going to be the guy as much as I wanted him to be the guy.
Yeah, it's too
bad. You know, just because that name is so large and everything that he's always done throughout the course of his career has always gotten teams into the playoffs. And so, you know, it's disappointing. But, you know, so when you see a Gus Bradley, Raider Nation immediately is going to be like, you know, it doesn't do anything for me because he doesn't have that reputation. But he's a damn good defensive coordinator. I mean, again, he can get the job done. You know, it's just it really all depends on the fit. And when I mean fit, I mean fit with the head coach. I mean fit with the coaches that are currently on staff, the ones that are going to still be there and the ones that won't still be there. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things that go into it. And again, it always goes back to the same conversation. I feel like at the end of the day, you've got to analyze, and that's what the Raiders are doing, analyze who you're going to have on your team, who you expect to be on that defensive side of the ball next season, and how are you going to maximize their talent?
Yeah, no doubt about that. So we'll talk to Noah about Gus Bradley, get to know him a little more, and we'll get his take on, you know, because it's a mixed bag. It doesn't matter who you hire, you have a mixed bag. And that's one of the callers we had late yesterday, Q, after you were gone. He said, well, you know, Gus Bradley, you know, look what he was on. Wasn't he a part of that Detroit team that was 0-16? And it's like, yeah, but, you know, when you're a coach or you do anything for a long period of time, you're going to be parts of teams and businesses that do well at certain times, that don't do well at certain times. And so if you dismiss somebody because they were part of a failure somewhere, you're going to have trouble finding anybody. Because I brought up, I said, look, so then are you going to tell me that Eric Bieniemy is not a great candidate and that it's always been Andy Reid because Andy Reid's the offensive genius, so you can dismiss Eric Bieniemy being a good coaching candidate because of Andy Reid? You can't have it both ways. These guys learn from their mentors. They work for good people who teach them things. Because a caller had said, look, well, yeah, when he was with the Legion of Boom, he had Pete Carroll. How much of it was Pete Carroll? How much of it was Gus Bradley? It's like, well, I don't know. We don't know. But when you're talking about these coaches, especially position coaches who are moving up into a different role, and he's been through all of them, you can't use that as a justification for dismissing somebody.
No, and that caller, and I wish I had been there for that call. I mean, that caller was talking about Rob Marinelli and Joe Barry. You know, right. He wasn't talking about Gus Bradley. Gus Bradley, he wasn't part of that Detroit team. Rod Marinelli was the head coach of that 0-6 team, and Joe Barry was the defensive coordinator. So correct. That wasn't Gus Bradley. Gus Bradley, he was part of the Jacksonville failure, and that's when he got fired as the head coach there. But for correct. A year or two when they were Saxonville, they were really damn good. But yeah. I keep going back to the fact that they had dogs. They had yes. real deal players. You yes. know what I mean? And sometimes you've got to get that real deal guy. And that's someone that I think that the Raiders really need to go and look for this offseason is a real deal dude who could be that difference maker on the defensive side of the ball.
Well, and that's the one thing I talked to at the end of the show yesterday, Q, with Vinny. And I want to visit here now because I think it's something we need to start exploring, which is the idea of where the Raiders are with the salary cap, because they have 21 unrestricted free agents. And the salary cap is going to shrink. We know that the most recent projections show that there's going to be a ceiling of about $175 or $176 million because of COVID and everything that happened this past year. That's about a $22 or $23 million drop from 2020. So the Raiders and all NFL teams are going to have to deal with a new reality when it comes to the salary cap. So if you put that into perspective, as Vinny said, he's got a great story up on the RJ about this. You see the salary cap from 2010, 2011, and what's happening there, it's a rise of about $188 million from 18 to 19, and then 19 to 20, it was, to 20, $188 million to $198 million. And if you look at where the Raiders are, Q, because everybody's like, well, yeah, if you cut this guy, if you cut that guy, they're going to have, you know, $60 million or whatever it is. Okay, $40 million. But if you look at what they're obligated to at this point, if they don't change something, just for giggles here, they would be $7.2 million over the $176 million estimated threshold. So now we know they're going to get below that because we know there's some guys that they're going to cut loose. But if you look at some of the deals that they would have to do and some of the guys they have to cut, it opens some questions about people that they are going to either commit to or they're going to cut loose. Of course, we've talked about Trent Brown. We've talked about Marcus Mariota. Tyrell Williams has been on the show. You have LaMarcus Joyner. You have Gabe Jackson, Richie Incognito. But there's a lot of decisions that have to be made here, Q. And then you have to start to think about, are there guys you want to go talk to and say, hey, can we restructure your contract so we can free up some money now to go sign some help for you so that we can win?
Right, exactly. And that's going to be one of the biggest questions. You know, that's going to be one of the biggest questions, and how they do it is going to really be the biggest question. And so I think that, like you mentioned, the biggest factor in this is everyone's looking at it from the Raiders' point of view, but it's a league-wide thing. So there's going to be teams that are going to make tough decisions and have to move on from some folks. And you know, and so that may be where a team like the Raiders could come in and benefit. You know, they may be able to get somebody that is unexpected to be out there on the open market. So that's another thing to keep in mind when you're putting this together this offseason. Mike Mayock and John Gruden, they've got to, and I know they do this already, but they've really got to turn over every single stone in the offseason in effort to put together this team.
Yeah, if you look at this, again, just to put the numbers out there, Q, Trent Brown, Tyrell Williams, Marcus Mariota, Richie Incognito, and Gabe Jackson, those combined five players are $49 million, and they can be cut.
Right.
The Raiders can just walk away from all five of those contracts without any salary cap hits. Now, there's a couple other guys I think they have to make tough choices on, and you talked about one the other day, which if he's playing his natural position, we might be having a different discussion. But LaMarcus Joyner, he has a $9.6 million contract next year and a $9.7 million for 2022. But there's just $2.5 million in cap space next year if he's cut. So if you cut LaMarcus Joyner, you save $7 million, and so he might be one of those guys, depending who the defensive coordinator is, come in and say, "Hey, Marcus, look, we want to keep you on. We need to restructure. We're going to put you at safety, but we need to cut a new deal here." And if he's willing to do it, great. If he's not, then he walks and he gets money somewhere else. But there's a lot of those decisions that need to be made, and so I don't think there's a lot of guys I think fans look at it and say, it's so easy. You just cut those guys. Well, yeah, but I mean, you start getting into the territory of Joyner, and I know he's had his issues, but you start talking about Jackson incognito. We don't know because he's been injured into the play, but you talk about Jackson, you talk about Brown, you talk about Mariota. Those three guys to me are going to be much more difficult decisions.
Yeah, they are, you know, and again, it all depends on how you're going to use these guys and how they're going to be most effective on your squad. Like Marcus Mariota, I mean, Raider Nation got to see him for a quick second, you know, and that came in relief of Derek Carr. And yes, he was, you know, very much worth it that game. And you saw why, okay, hey, that's why they went out and made the move, just in case something happened to Carr and they needed to break glass in case of emergency. And he gave them a fighting chance to win the game. Matter of fact, should have won the game. But, you know, if that's only time you're going to use him, then he might not be worth that money. You know what I mean? So you have to make those tough decisions. And if you do decide that you're going to move forward and, you know what, we're going to use this guy a little bit, you know, in the red zone, we're going to use this guy in packages on the field, then, okay, I could say that money is justified. But that's, again, something that John Gruden's got to look in his eyes and look in the mirror and say, how am I going to use this guy? And if it's going to be worth it, then pull the trigger on it and keep him around. If he's not going to be worth it, then it's not really worth that money just because of everything that we've already said.
Yeah, and I think there's guys too, Q, when you look down later on the list, guys you know are also going to be gone, so their money is freed up that they took up this year. I mean, Malik Collins gone. I think Zay Jones is gone. Nathan Peterman, I don't know. It depends what happens with Mariota. But Kyle Wilbur, of course, Jason Witten was here. And then you look at some of those guys like Sam Young, who can't stay on the field, again, availability. Daryl Worley, you know, those type of guys I just don't see. So there's going to be a lot of and I'm not saying you're going to go out and get big money, but I think you're going to be able to free up those guys to get to some of those need positions, like we talked about, edge position, linebacker position, safety and cornerback from a veteran perspective. And then, of course, you have all these draft picks that they're going to come in and they're going to have to pay those guys too.
Yeah, no, they are. And, you know, it's just it should be interesting. I mean, it really will be. And that's why the offseason is kind of fun to talk about, because there's so much speculation. But until you actually start seeing moving and shaking and you start seeing guys released, and look, free agency is not going to come up for a while. Obviously, the Super Bowl is not here. Hell, the playoffs haven't even started. I mean, you know, it's going to have to wait till the new league year. But it's so intriguing, because all we could do right now is say, well, do you think that this guy fits? Do you think that this guy's a fit? Do you think this guy's willing to take a pay cut? Do you think this guy can stay on the field? Right. I mean, and, you know, I mean, I think about Trent Brown. If I knew that the dude could stay on the field, hell, I'd be all in on making sure he returns. I'm just not convinced, and I don't know if there's anything that anyone could say to me that's going to convince me Trent Brown's going to go for 16 games next year, because we haven't seen it.
Yeah, and to me, there's also some fascination with some of those guys that have been on the practice squad, some of those guys who were undrafted free agents. A guy we talked a lot about, Javon White, last year, that hybrid linebacker safety role. You know, how did he develop this year? We don't know yet, because we haven't been able to go to practice. We haven't seen any of that. As we get into OTAs in the spring and mini camps and all that kind of stuff, we'll get a chance to see how he's doing. We'll get a chance to see how Tanner Muse is doing coming off the injury. Like, you know, I hope the guy proves me wrong, but I don't see the Tanner Muse thing other than being a special teams player. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he suddenly becomes who they thought he was going to be, and he's been able to develop over the course of the year, because we just haven't had insight into that. Usually, you know, you're able to go see those guys practice when you have a regular season, and you can kind of get a sense for, hey, I've been talking to guys and they say, you know, this guy's been doing amazing, even though he's not playing or he's not on the active roster. So we'll have to see how some of those guys work out, because instead of going with some of these veterans that are in those positions that are role players and rotational guys, suddenly you go with one of those young guys and you save money there too. So there's a lot of ways, and I think a lot of fascination around how this team is going to deal with the salary cap and with filling the needs that they have.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny when you talk about Tanner Muse. I like that, because I kind of think at some point, and maybe I'm wrong, because maybe, like you said, maybe he ends up proving you wrong and he ends up being the real deal player. I thought that he was going to be somebody. Obviously, Raider Nation saw nothing from him his rookie year. There may be a case of, you know, Mike Mayock, John Gruden fell in love with the Tigers. You know, fell in love with Clemson, and because they're so you know, comfortable with drafting Clemson Tigers, that they just looked and said, hey, this will be another one of those guys. This will be another guy that hits for us. And maybe, you know, maybe he's ends up being, like you said, because I know you questioned the pick from the minute it was picked. You know, he might end up being special teams guy at the most. Now, if he doesn't, great. But, you know, you got to be careful. And I know I'm not telling anything or saying anything that Mike Mayock doesn't already know, but you got to be careful with falling in love with what you're comfortable with.
Yeah, no doubt. That goes in life, man, in general.
Yeah,
no matter exactly what you're doing at home, in your job, it's so, so true. But it's all good. All right, well, we are finished with segment one. We're going to say goodbye to Q. He'll be joining us back in the second hour for the Q-tip. Coming up after the break, we'll get to your calls. 702-365-9200 is the number, the Raider Nation Radio listener hotline. After the break, I will get right to calls. You can also text us, 69187, the letters RNR, then your question and your name. Q, we'll talk to you in just a little bit.
All right, brother. Appreciate you.
All right. We'll be back right here on Raider Nation Radio. All right. Welcome back to this Friday edition of Silver and Black Today as the King brings us back. Yes, he would have been 86 years old today. It is Elvis's birthday. I will celebrate with a fried banana and peanut butter sandwich. It's also David Bowie's birthday. So I'm a music guy, so it doesn't matter what kind of music. Usually, other than hip-hop after the 90s, I have no idea. That's why Q usually fills in for me on that stuff. But nonetheless, happy birthday, Elvis. Happy birthday, David Bowie. Both gone, unfortunately, but that's the way it goes. You're back here, Silver and Black Today, powered by Sam and Ash Injury Attorneys, 702-820-1234. You can be part of the show, 702-365-9200 is the number. Mo Moten is our guest coming up next in just a minute here. First, we're going out to, I believe, Chicago. Are you in Chicago, Corey?
No, I'm not in Chicago, but I'm up in that area.
Oh, you're in Illinois. Okay, good, yeah, man. That's my home state. That's where I was born. But what do you got for us today, Corey?
I'm not just sitting here curious, just still thinking about listening to what everyone was talking about the defensive coordinator and yada, yada, yada. But, you know, and a lot of people's calling and talking about John and his play calling. And, you know, earlier they're talking about getting in a young offensive coordinator. The NFL's, it's just evolving. It's changing. And John's system, you know, like the guy called him earlier, man, he's calling the same six plays all game long. So the defense has to work with the offense, and we stall. You know, Derek can get the ball down to the 20, and then he stalls. It's like he just goes dumb and throws the ball out of bounds. So
yeah, the last half of the season, Corey, they certainly had trouble scoring touchdowns in the red zone. Of course, they got points with field goals. That's why Daniel Carlson set the record. We talked about that with Levi Edwards yesterday. But, the offense regressed a little bit towards the end of the year. It doesn't mean they were the problem. The defense was clearly the biggest problem. But John Gruden, in his postseason press conference right after the season ended, he said that. He said, look, yeah, there were some things that we need to get better at, as did Greg Olsen. So I think they'll get to that. No, the team's not a finished product. There's much, much, much work to be done on both sides of the ball. Of course, on defense, there's a lot more, not just the coach, but also players as well. But that's the thing with the offense. Look, it's not perfect, but I've also said to the point, the offense has to be tweaked. The offense has some things it needs to work out. The defense, on the other hand, has a lot of work to do, including personnel.
Yeah, I mean, and then everyone's talking about the defense system trading, and like, we just got all these young defensive players and these free agents. I mean, the stubbornness in the old DC that John let go, and we've seen that was hard on him. But
check.
I mean, maybe just let John take his hands off a little bit more and just be more of a coach and get a good coordinator in there that can maybe, you know, because running rugs in motion every single play, I don't think that's fooling anybody.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Corey, thank you for the call, man. We really appreciate you, and you listen to the show every day. Thanks so much. I think part of it is, too, is they just didn't run the ball effectively towards the end of the season. If they run the ball well, I understand what you're saying about being more creative. I tend to think that I'd love to see them get more creative, but I also think, you know, you listen to Hunter Renfro when he's on our show on Monday. He talks about the offense, and he says, yeah, you know, a lot of times we have lots of stuff we can do, but if we don't establish the run, if we don't do it, what we're supposed to do, then we can't be more creative. So we'll see. But Corey, again, thanks for the call. All right, we're going out to our guests now, going out to New York City, and we bring in our senior NFL columnist at silverandblacktoday.com, also breaking news writer for the NFL as well as fantasy football for Bleacher Report. That is one Mr. Mo Moten, or as we call him, the Baron of Brooklyn. Mo, how you doing today, buddy?
Doing well. You can't please Raider fans these days. You get a young guy in the circle of interviews, and they're not happy. And it's, as you mentioned earlier, it's all about Wade Phillips, I guess.
Yeah, well, and we'll get to, we have so much to talk about, and of course, never enough time. But Mo, I think one of the things you talk about too, that you just mentioned, is Raider fans being happy. And I think that no matter what it is with, whether it's offense, defense, whether it's coaches, whether it's players, to me, it's just indicative of a fan base that wants to win so badly, and it's been so long that a lot of times, again, and for me, it's a little different because I'm a little removed from it, the emotion of being a fan, it's awesome. It's a great thing, and I think that the Raider fans, the Silver and Black community, is the best in all of football. But you start to see at this time of the year when there's directions that this team has to go, whether it's hiring a coach or whether it's talking about free agents. And I think people's expectations, you know, they want the sizzle, they want the flash, they want the sexy, but that's not always how you win.
You're right. That's not always how you win. But there's another issue here. And I think the fan base, and they rightfully do, I would say they don't trust Gruden and the way the direction is going with this team. Because if you look, again, when you have two seasons where you look like a playoff team in the first half and you look like you belong in the top 10 in the draft picks in the second half of the season, and you have a coach that you hold on to for too long, a defensive coordinator in Paul Gunther that you should have fired a year ago, those fans are not going to feel like they can trust your judgment on some of these things. And and with Gruden, with some of these hires, and you're questioning, oh, he's bringing in guys that he's known from Tampa Bay. And fans are, again, rightfully questioning, are these guys the best people for the job? So while I get the healthy skepticism, that's part of the reason of it. And if, I feel like if this team was steadily, let's say the Raiders had went 10-6 and won 10 games, I think people would be more open to Gruden's ideas of his hires and say, okay, this team is at least headed in the right direction. But when the win column is kind of stagnant, yeah, you're going to get some raised eyebrows.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, one win improvement. I know, you know, talking to Max Crosby on Monday, they said, hey, we're one game better. And for the players, that's good. You take some progress, some forward progress. But you're right. For the fans, it was disappointing. There's no other way to say it. It was disappointing all the way around, especially with how you started 6-3. And to win only two games over that whole stretch of the back half was incredibly disappointing. So I understand why they're down, and I understand why they want something. And the trust with Gruden as the guy who's kind of running the operation is lower until he does something to prove them wrong. But when we talk about the defensive coordinator position, as you know, the last couple of days we've talked about, we've had up on the website, that Gus Bradley appears to be the leading candidate at this time. Of course, they spoke to Chris Richard today. Our colleague Vinny Bonsignor reported that they officially interviewed Chris Richard today, of course, for the Cowboys. And so that was good news to see some young blood in there. But again, as I said with Q yesterday, no matter who they choose, unless his name happens to be Wade Phillips, I don't know that 70% of the fan base will be happy.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think part of that is because they want a guy who's got just as much cachet, not just as much as cachet as Gruden, but enough cachet where you could say this guy's a leader. He marches to his own drum. He's not just going to be a yes man for Gruden. I think that's what fans want. They don't want a guy that's just going to refer or be a former subordinate of Gruden and used to taking orders from him. And that's what you have in Joe Barry and Gus Bradley and Raheem Morris. Again, they're guys that who served as position coaches under Gruden when he was in Tampa Bay. The reason I'm enthusiastic about the Chris Richard interview, and I'm not saying he's the best candidate for the position, but it's kind of outside of Gruden's coaching tree. He's under Pete Carroll's coaching tree. And I know he spent 2 years with Rod Marinelli. He's familiar with some of the coaches on staff, but that's how the way the world works. You're not just going to hire somebody completely out of blue that you don't know. Just think about the times that you've been on, you've been at jobs and they've hired a person that you may be familiar with. A lot of times your boss, your supervisor will ask you, well, what do you think of so-and-so? Is he or she a good worker? You know, have you been around him? What's the skinny? What's the 411? So that's what happens in the NFL. The NFL is no different when it comes to these coaching hires. Chris Richard is familiar with, as I said, Rod Marinelli. He's also familiar with Gus Bradley. So there's a connection there. But again, I just like the fact that he's a young head coach who has some position coaching experience. He was coaching LOB before that group had a name. Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, before we even gave them a name, Legion of Boom, he was coaching those guys as defensive back. So I like the fact that he's young blood outside of the tree, and he has some experience coaching some of the best players that we've seen in this league at the defensive back position.
Mo Moten, breaking news writer at Bleacher Report on the NFL, as well as our senior NFL columnist at silverandblacktoday.com, is with us. And you mentioned Richard. Richard worked under Bradley with the Seahawks, right? And then he worked, like you said as well, with Rod Marinelli. I think, too, some of these guys that are coming in for interviews, like Barry, and Vinny intimated this earlier in the week, which is some of these guys might come in and interview for the DC position, and if it's, let's say it's a Bradley, Richard might come anyway, as might Barry, to create a bigger staff of guys that are all familiar with one another, or at least you know, have one degree of separation from each other. So you might be looking at the construction of a defensive staff. I know some Raider fans will be uncomfortable with that because they'll say, hey, well, then why did you hire a defensive coordinator who can't bring in his own people? But in many ways, you know, these guys are all connected. So could we see that, Mo, that you see Bradley and Richard and Barry all in the same staff?
It's possible, but they would have to swallow their pride a little bit, because for Barry, it would be a lateral move. He is a linebackers coach with the Rams. Do the Rams want to let him go? It's that type of situation where, okay, I'm not the defensive coordinator, but I'm a position coach, and I was already doing that. That's with Joe Barry being a linebackers coach. But Chris Richard, he has an interesting story. He's not coaching this year, and the reason he's not coaching this year is because he turned down a defensive backs coaching position. He wanted something more. And I read an article that said that he feels like, I know my worth. And basically he's saying, look, I was a defensive coordinator with Seattle. I was a defensive coordinator and called the plays with the Dallas Cowboys. I don't want to take a step back and become a position coach. But I will say this, if your market is as such where you cannot get a job as a defensive coordinator or a head coach, because he was getting head coaching interviews at one point as a hot candidate, if you can't get any of those higher positions, you're going to have to go back and cut your teeth as a position coach and work your way up again. That's just the way the world works. We all have our expectations, but sometimes the market does not meet our expectations, and you have to eat a little bit of humble pie and work your way up, and that could happen to him.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because, again, the issue of minority hiring in the NFL is also still at the top of the list of concerns around the league. And I know we're going to have Rod Graves from the Fritz Pollard Foundation on the show next week to talk about that. But in this case, too, Chris Richards so far is the only minority candidate to interview for the job as well. And so it's going to be interesting. I mean, you have a year where you probably see, obviously, Eric Bieniemy get a job somewhere, wherever he decides to go, as well as others, but the Raiders hiring these positions will be telling to me, because that's the one thing I know you and I talked about last week too, Mo, which is the fact that, look, John Gruden has to look in the mirror. How much is he willing to cede control to others, including coordinators, right? We all know on the offense who makes the calls there, right? I know Greg Olson's there. He's a trusted person. He's got his relationship with Derek Carr and all that stuff, but John Gruden runs the offense, right? And on the defense, now I think there's a lot of concern, because it's like, well, you're making them keep Rod Marinelli without a doubt, even though his group did not perform well under Paul Gunther's system at the very least. And now if you're going to bring in a coach and Gruden's out hiring other people, I think it does not build confidence amongst that fan base, like you were talking about, who are concerned with Gruden and don't necessarily trust where he's going.
Yeah, absolutely. And Gruden did talk about having a defense coordinator who would empower his position coaches. So that, I think that's the selling point, to say, hey, if you come over here and be a position coach, you're not just going to be forgotten. Your input is going to be valuable to us and to the defensive coordinator. So I think, again, when you try to sell Chris Richard on being maybe a DB coach if he's not the defensive coordinator, it's going to say, hey, you know, we're going to value your opinion. You're going to have some say-so in this. You're going to have an entire defensive back unit of young guys that you can develop, and eventually probably you'll be able to move up. We're not going to stop you from a promotion if you get one. But I think that's very important. I think that defensive coordinator, again, has to be, as Gruden is to the whole team, a CEO of that defensive side of the ball. Again, we'll see how it shakes out. I did tweet an interesting situation that we could have. The Chargers also have a head coaching vacancy, and they interview Jason Garrett. Jason Garrett had Chris Richard on his staff in Dallas. So there could be a situation where Chris Richard, if he doesn't get the defensive coordinator position with the Raiders and Jason Garrett gets hired with the Chargers, Jason Garrett may bring him over to be a defensive coordinator with that team. So the Raiders may see Chris Richard even if they don't hire him, which is funny.
it's crazy that it's a small world, right? We talk about it all the time. It's part of the problem around is that there's just not that when jobs open up, you think there's a lot of jobs, but in reality, there's so many connections to players and relationships and coaches and all that kind of stuff that it doesn't really open up all that wide. Mo, the other thing I want to talk to you about, Q and I talked earlier in the show about the salary cap for the Raiders. Of course, we know some of the big names that are most likely to be cut. You know, to me, at an 80% certainty, that of course Trent Brown, unless he will restructure. It all depends on whether he wants to play football and whether he's going to stay on the field. Secondarily, we know Tyrell Williams most likely is gone if he doesn't want to restructure. When you look at that salary cap situation, and you know because you cover the entire NFL as well as the Raiders, the salary cap, we still don't know the number. We do know it's going to be significantly less, and so the Raiders are going to have to make a bunch of decisions. And when they do make those decisions, they're going to put a lot of trust in young players they already have, and they're going to have to go out and sign the right guys. But it's going to be a competitive market. Is there anybody out there that you see might be a cost-cutting measure on another team that would be a good fit for this Raiders defense?
I haven't looked at cost guys that could be cut elsewhere. I do have articles that are coming up for that. Mm-hmm. I mostly looked at who's going to be already available. But as you said, there are two things here. Number one, the Raiders don't have a defensive coordinator. So if we're looking at guys that the Raiders can pick up on the defensive side of the ball, I would probably wait to see who's the coordinator first before we even think about the players, because that, you know, we can't put the cart before the horse here. But also, you have to look at the uncertainty, as you said, with the cap. How much is the cap going to drop? And I think that will dictate how much the Raiders will need to cut and how much they can save going into free agency. And we all know the big names: Trent Brown, Tyrell Williams, Gabe Jackson, LaMarcus Joyner, Marcus Mariota. All of those guys could be cut with no or very little cap dead money left over. LaMarcus Joyner, I believe $2.5 million in dead money will be left if he's cut. But I think the Raiders will wind up cutting at least two of those guys. And if I had to pick two, I would say Tyrell Williams, because either Tyrell Williams or Nelson Aguilar are neither come back. Either one or the other, go and draft a guy. And I think Trent Brown is out simply because he's just not available. Q talks about availability all the time. But as far as guys coming out that could be cut from other teams, I would hold off, because every year we see it. There are guys that you didn't think would be available, and all of a sudden they pop up on the free agent pool.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. On that front line, too, the offense, you know, I've seen some growing rumblings of people, oh, cut Gabe Jackson, which I don't think is a good idea.
No.
But if you were, and then Incognito might be gone and Brown's gone, suddenly you have three offensive linemen, even though Incognito was out most of the season, you have three holes in your offensive line that you suddenly have to fill. Yeah, John Simpson's there, the rookie who played well at times this year, but that's a lot to ask, especially when your offense has done pretty well despite the end of the year kind of dip that they had. So we'll have to see with that.
Really quick spot. Not a cut, but a player that I think caught some buzz within Raiders Twitter and Raiders social media that could be moved. I think you need to look at Stephon Gilmore. He's going into the last year of his contract. The Patriots may want to change things around. They may want to move him. Bill Belichick is known for moving off guys a year early. And I guess the Patriots want to move him versus him just going into free agency next year and not getting anything for him. So I can see him being moved for possibly a second or third round pick. Would the Raiders be interested in that? I would jump on it.
It's funny you say that, too, because Q and I, all week, we've kind of had a little bit of theme around the fact that we think that they need a veteran either at safety or cornerback to come in with that young, talented group that they have there. So we are in agreement on that. Well, Mo, I know it's been a long grind of a season. I know you're going to get some downtime, but we will talk to you next time.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. You take care. Mo Moten, senior NFL columnist at silverandblacktoday.com. You can also read him all the time on Bleacher Report. He covers the NFL and does a great job on fantasy football, too. He is one busy dude, and we love having him around. All right, it's time for a break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Noah Strang. Noah wrote the story about getting to know Gus Bradley. We'll talk to him about Bradley as the leading candidate right now, what he brings, concerns that you might have about him, and all the rest. You're here on Silver and Black Today, only on Raider Nation Radio. All right, welcome back. Chris Chapman back in the studio bringing us in both last breaks. Last break was Elvis, whose birthday it is today, would have been 86. And of course, the late, great David Bowie there coming back in from that break. Thanks for being with us here. Silver and Black Today, powered by our friends Sam and Ash, injury attorneys. Check them out, Sam and Ash Law. NewsMakerLine.com. Now we go back out on the Newsmaker line. We bring in our next guest, staff writer over at SilverAndBlackToday.com. He also covers hockey in the Great White North. It's Noah Strang. Noah, thanks for being with us, man.
Thank you for having me on.
Now, are you ready for the Golden Knights to finally win the Cup? Are you ready for that?
We'll see. I think the Canucks have a bit of a better chance.
All right. Well, let's jump in. You wrote a piece up on the website about Gus Bradley because we keep hearing that he is the leading candidate. We keep hearing that that John Gruden, the relationship obviously going back to the time when he hired him out of the college ranks into the pros with the Buccaneers, that he might be the guy. But we didn't know really, not everybody knew a lot about Bradley except for, of course, his time in Jacksonville a little bit and then, of course, his time with the Chargers. But when you look at Gus Bradley and the fact that he's emerged as the top candidate perhaps here as of right now for the Raiders defensive coordinator position, it's that relationship with John Gruden. How did these two first get hooked up going back to when he gave him his first job in Tampa?
Yeah, well, like as you said, Gruden hired Bradley out of North Dakota State to get Bradley's first job in the NFL. And I think as Mo touched upon it earlier, Raiders fans are going to question if it's just Gruden bringing in another one of his guys or he's really the best person for the job. And but the thing to remember is that Bradley's had good stops in Seattle, Jacksonville, and at the Chargers since then. He's put together a solid resume in the NFL as a defensive coordinator and coach.
Yeah, he has. I mean, you go back to that first role in Tampa Bay with Gruden. Of course, he worked under the under defensive coordinator Monty Kiffin there when Gruden was the head coach and learned a lot. What did he do down in Tampa? Like, it's that Tampa 2 system, right, that he learned there. And then did he use that when he went, or at least elements of it, when he went to work for Pete Carroll in Seattle?
Exactly. Well, in Tampa, he really focused on the Tampa 2 system. But moving into Seattle, he was a big part in developing the Legion of Boom defense the early days, and he was working on the cover 3 system there. Mm-hmm. And that's a system that I think Raiders fans have a little bit of a fear bringing into Las Vegas, as I think that's what he would try to implement, and how that worked with the roster there, we're still not sure. Obviously, the Raiders have some talented young corners and Damon Arnett and Mullen, but those guys are guys that mostly played man defense in the past. How they would adjust to like a cover 2 or cover 3 heavy scheme is still up in the air.
Yeah, and you wrote in there that when Bradley went to the Seahawks, they were the 25th in points allowed in 2009, and then by 2013, they gave up the lowest amount. There's a lot of folks that I've gotten feedback from that say, well, when he was in Seattle, it was Pete Carroll who was kind of doing that thing. What did he do? What did you see from him in Seattle with that cover 3 system and that Legion of Boom that, yeah, I know that what you're saying, the concern about the players the Raiders have now, but if they were to bring him in, could he adapt to that? What did he do in Seattle that makes you think that maybe he's got the ability to either adapt, or if the Raiders were to go out and maybe find some players to that better fit that system?
Well, you know, when he arrived in Seattle, it wasn't like they had a strong defense at the time. And he came a year before Pete Carroll did. And he managed to take that defense in 3 years from 24th in yards allowed per game to the top 10. And same for points allowed per game. So I think he's shown that he can come into a team that has a struggling defense, maybe with some young, talented players, and kind of turn the ship around, implement his system. I think one thing that's good to point out is he talks about playing a simple defense, something that allows players to play fast, kind of make decisions on their own. And that would be something that would be good for young players who perhaps don't have all that time, the NFL, the experience with some of the complex defenses, and they would be able to just play their games and make quick-hitting decisions.
We're talking to Noah Strang. He's a staff writer up at SilverAndBlackToday.com about his story on Gus Bradley, getting to know Gus Bradley. And, of course, the elephant in the middle of the room, Noah, is the fact that so he was one of those hot commodities in the NFL. He comes out of Seattle. He gets the head coaching job in Jacksonville. Now, I will say, caveat, I don't make excuses for coaches and their failures because he was 14-48 there while the head coach of the Jaguars. But the Jaguars organization has been a mess. What did you see, or what was the kind of book on him in Jacksonville? Why did he have so much trouble there? And what was their defense like during his time there?
Yeah, well, while he was in Jacksonville, again, when he got there, the defense wasn't great. Bottom 5 in points allowed per game, bottom 5 in yards allowed per game. But over the years, we see he started to turn the things around a little bit. By the time that he left, the team was 6th in yards per game allowed. And the years after he left, of course, Jacksonville started to have a really strong defense and top 5 in both of those numbers. And they actually made the AFC Championship game on the back of their defense. I think there's also, of course, lots of negatives to his time in there. As you said, the team didn't win. Players spoke out against Bradley. Jalen Ramsey was obviously outspoken, saying that Bradley didn't really change plays. He wasn't very much of an adaptive coach. I know that's something that Raiders fans have had problems with the defense in the past here, where it seems like they don't make halftime adjustments. Mm-hmm. So I think that could be an issue moving forward.
Yeah, it's a good point because he did his drafts as coach along with the GM there during his time there really built that defense into a pretty good defense, even though they didn't win games. Of course, they had a terrible time on the offensive side of the ball during his years in Jacksonville as well, which I think was the biggest contributing factor to them not winning. So he gets fired in 2016. He finds his way out west again. He joins up with the Chargers in the defensive coordinator role. What's his career been like? Because the Chargers have had a lot of talent. The Chargers have also had a lot of injuries on defense to key players, but what have you seen from him during his time in Los Angeles with the Chargers that is admirable and that makes you think that he could perhaps be a good fit here with the Raiders?
You know, as you said, he's gone out to the Chargers, and he's actually done a good job of turning their defense into one of the better ones in the league. In the first 3 years that he was there, they were a top 10 defense. And just this past year, they had to deal with a lot of injuries, and that obviously made it tough on them. They allowed a lot of points this year, and Raiders fans will be quick to point out that the Raiders had a lot of success against them this year. But, you know, they're missing key players for big amounts of games. Joey Bosa missed time. Melvin Ingram missed time. Derwin James missed the whole season. And it's tough as a coach when you lose your big guys like that. I think one thing that's worth pointing out is during his time in Los Angeles, this past season, for example, they were 32nd in blitz percentage. They only blitzed 16.3% of the time. The Raiders, you know, we don't have a defensive line that can get pressure, maybe with a four-man rush. They've struggled with that this past year, getting pressure with just the four-man rush. And if they're not blitzing, it's going to be hard to get to the quarterback.
No, in closing, I know you said that it might be an intriguing choice for the Raiders and John Gruden to make this decision if they were to choose Gus Bradley. In your view, is it a good fit, or do you think that there's too many question marks to really make a definitive kind of call on whether or not it would be?
In my fit, I think it would be a good. He'd be a good fit in Las Vegas. I think, though, that it would be even better if they could get someone like Chris Richard to come along with him. Mm-hmm. Those two both obviously worked in Seattle and helped make the defense into one of the best in the league there. And I think that if someone came along with him like that, that would be the best case scenario.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff, and we'll see. Chris Richard, of course, interviewed today, as we heard in the reports from our colleague Vinny Bonsignor earlier this morning. So it'll be interesting. But, Noah, I know you're going to keep track of this defensive coordinator search. We certainly appreciate you coming on. Follow Noah on Twitter, at Noah Strang _ on Twitter. You can follow him for both Raider stuff and for hockey. Noah, thanks for joining us today, man. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for having me.
All right, there you go, Noah Strang. So, yeah, so there it is, Gus Bradley. Some people not excited, but I invite you to go to silverandblacktoday.com and read the story and Noah's analysis up there, because at least you get to know more. If you want to make an opinion, if you think he's the wrong choice, that's fine. We're here. We don't have to agree on everything, but he is, from all reports that we have, the leading candidate at this time, so it's good to know a little more about what he did, and then you can look elsewhere, too, to get a little more in-depth information on him. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll take your calls. Tell me what you think. Would you be okay with Gus Bradley? Let me ask you this question. Would you be okay with anybody other than Wade Phillips? Because that seems to be my Twitter feed these days, is if it's not Wade Phillips, you guys aren't happy. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's just the people who tweet at me. But let us know. 702-365-9200 is the Raider Nation Radio listener hotline. You can also text me your response on the Sam and Ash text line at 69187. Then you put in the letters R&R for Raider Nation Radio, your question or comment, and your name, and I will read it on the air. We'll be back. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit of sports betting. What action this weekend on the NFL Wild Card Weekend? Where should you put your money? Also, the National College Football Championship game on Monday. We're going to talk to Jeff Parles, as we do
every Friday from Book It HQ. He's going to give us some insight to that, hopefully make you some scratch this weekend. You're here on Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio.